Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day. Thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb, in for Colin Cowherd. We got a great show for you live from Los Angeles. Hope you had a spectacular weekend. Personally, I watched more, like, I should have planned this thing better. I really should have. I had knee surgery on Friday afternoon, and I should have done it first football weekend of the season. If I knew where I would be located, which was on my couch with my remote, I guess I should have known. I should have done that. Regardless of which, I did get a chance to see NFL football of some variety with the Hall of Fame game. We did see Team USA victoriously. They were victorious in the gold medal winning game. I want to get to my thoughts on Kevin Durant and what was gained, what was lost in our gold medal performance. And, well, we got some other stuff to get to as well, like the Hall of Fame speeches, which, like, I get, like, wrap these things up. The guy you want to hear more from in Peyton Manning, we only got 6 minutes of, so it was just filled with one-liners and zingers and a great Mamba out, you know, God bless football line. But we got a good amount to get to. Plus, Jason Lockham-Four will join us. John McCain, who, of course, covered the Houston Texans since they became the Houston Texans, since their infancy, going back to the Houston Oilers days, covered NFL football. He tweeted out earlier today that Deshaun Watson will never play for the Houston Texans ever again. And then Albert Breer tweeted out that the Texans are still trying to work out a way in which he can play for the... It's very confusing. We'll figure out Deshaun Watson, Jimmy Garoppolo, and some other stuff. We got a litany of quality football guests. Speaking of football, the big news over the weekend is Josh Allen, star quarterback, Buffalo Bills, signs a new deal. Now, the new deal will keep him in Buffalo for, six more years in addition to the 2 years remaining on his contract. Now, we'll get to what it means for two other quarterbacks, same draft class, Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, in a second. But here's one where you scratch your head and you wonder aloud, hold on now, is this another Jared Goff? Now, the stats would tell you there's a lot of eerie similarities. And you're like, no way, Josh Allen's way better than Jared Goff. I tend to agree with you. Okay, I tend to agree with you. But if you just look at it from the raw stats, right, it's kind of alarming. Win percentage, right? Well, I will grant you that Jared Goff, it felt like once he took over, okay, was taking over a better roster. But the fact is, if you look back, the Rams were bad. They were bad in his first year. So it wasn't like they were an 8-8 team under the previous regime. But still, Jared Goff has won 63.1% of his games. Josh Allen has won 63.6% of his games during his first 3 years in the NFL. Their completion percentage, Jared Goff 62.1%. Josh Allen, 61.8. Their touchdown to interception ratio. Josh Allen, a couple more TDs, 67 to the 65 of Goff, but also Josh Allen, a couple more interceptions, 31 to 26. Yards gained, 9,700 via the pass for Josh Allen, 95.81 for Jared Goff. Yards per attempt, actually more for Jared Goff, 7.7 to 7.2 for Josh Allen. Passer rating, Jared Goff actually higher, 94.7 to 90.4. So you look at it and you're like, man, the stats. I don't know, is it Jared Goff actually, was he better in his first 3 years than Josh Allen? And if, you know, we do this keeping up with the Joneses thing, but should we keep up with the Joneses when they spent poorly like the LA Rams did? I was at Rams camp last week and they could not be more excited about Matt Stafford. And they do appear to not just be another playoff team, but a team that if they're healthy, if Aaron Donald's healthy, Matt Stafford's healthy, their offensive line's healthy, no reason to think they can't compete for a Super Bowl. But they They signed Jared Goff to an extension a year before they needed to, much like Josh Allen, and they rued the day. They just did. Now, here are the differences. Josh Allen was drafted by the same head coach and general manager that he's playing for. Remember, Jared Goff was drafted by the previous regime, different head coach. Okay, so Sean McVay did not, who is a, you know, a quarterback whisperer, a quarterback guru. He's a Gruden guy who you do think can run out of patience with quarterbacks. Sean McVay was not the head coach there when they drafted them. So there is a little bit of sweat equity there. In addition, the things that we aren't pointing out is that Josh Allen is a far better athlete, right? And he's made plays with his legs. He's also one of the reasons for more interceptions is he pushes the ball downfield more often. It was one of the things that really burned Sean McVay on Jared Goff was he wouldn't take chances on their explosive plays. But this is not a perfect science, and stats are not always telling. And I believe the Bills have a better quarterback, a better fit. They play in worse conditions, and they got a stronger arm guy. And right now, they're doing a victory lap saying, we finally found our quarterback. We've been searching since Jim Kelly retired to find our next great quarterback, and we got him, and we locked him up. But there is precedence for this type of early success and yet not being the right contract, not being the right guy. Which brings us to the Ravens. John Harbaugh said, quote, it's not really a hurry for us. He's going to be our quarterback for years to come. Remember, the Ravens, much like the Bills, much like the Browns, okay, you have 2 more years of contract and then potentially 2 more years of franchise tag if you want to. All that time, you know, during the next 4 seasons, you can negotiate some sort of long-term extension. And with the cap spiking up next year after being down this year, there's untold millions out there for Lamar. And let's also be honest. We have questions about Lamar's longevity in terms of his health. He proved a lot of people wrong in terms of his ability to come from behind, get a road win in the playoffs. 2 things we didn't think he could do, and he has done. Now he has to take the next step. And the challenge to Lamar Jackson is once he starts making all that money, he's played with a Super Bowl defense his first 3 seasons. Once he starts making all that money, can the Ravens still support him? And can the entirety of the team be good enough for when Lamar goes on his inaccurate streaks? Or he turns the football over? For Baker Mayfield, you know, I don't know what his thinking is. Every quarterback comes into this thinking, whatever the highest dollar value that the last contract signed was, I'm going to get $1 more. But I think all of us are reasonable thinking Baker Mayfield's not that guy, right? He is, and there's an absence of a middle class in quarterback play, and Baker Mayfield feels like the first of the guys that'll be. He's not a $40 million a year guy. He's probably not a mid-30s guy. But in the high 20s, with the salary cap going up, if you can continue to surround him with all of these players, he's a pretty good leader and a pretty good quarterback. That's, I think, the feeling. But if he prices himself out, he could be out. Look, I like that the Ravens and the Browns are going to let this thing play out a little bit. Hey, the more info we have, if he's really the guy, he's really the guy. And we'll figure out what to do with the 5th year that contract works by. And we'll figure out what to do with the franchise tags. And I think Josh Allen appears to be an absolute stud. He improved in his accuracy from year 2 to year 3, and that type of jump we don't normally see. And we'll see if he's able to maintain that level or even improve it. Lamar Jackson has improved in his accuracy for the most part. Took a little bit of a step back in many ways last year, but now they continue to try and mold and fit that offense around him. And he had COVID last year and other things set him back. I'm a sit and wait guy. I would rather pay more. This is like me. You know what this is like? This is like if you're going to go on a trip. And it really comes down to the type of person you are. Some people, the second they know they're going to go on a trip, they go and lock in and get the flights. To me, the flexibility is way more valuable. Way more valuable. I would rather pay $100 more and fly at the last second where I get the exact times at the exact airport at the exact location that I want instead of, hey man, look at this killer rate. Yeah, but you got to fly out of Ontario. Not LA, not Ontario, California, Ontario, Canada, right? No, you got to fly out of some nondescript airport. You have a long layover. You don't stay exactly at the resort. Like, what am I doing here? Just to save money? If you're the Ravens, you're the Bills, you're the Rams, you're the Browns, aren't you better off spending a little bit more but being completely and totally sure of what you got and how you want to use it? We don't know what the cap's going to look like. We don't know what football is going to look like with 17 games this year. We don't know a lot of things. Heck, last year, if you really want to be honest, last year was the easiest year to play quarterback in the NFL. No, you didn't have the same prep time, but you didn't have road opposing fans to cause any sort of noise or any sort of ruckus. Right? These veteran quarterbacks, even the rookie quarterbacks, they're not walking into hostile environments last year. So if it's me, I'm better off with the Ravens. The Ravens being cautiously optimistic, we'll get a deal done. We may end up paying a little bit more than we want to, but at least we know what we're getting when we pay for it. And we know what the salaries look like. And we know what some of these new pieces fit in around it. And we know if Lamar has taken that next step, or was it a step back because he just has a lower ceiling than we thought. The same thing for Baker. Remember, Baker had some downs. There were some doubts last year. There were some times in which he was holding them back. Now, I think talent-wise, they're a favorite to not just make the playoffs like they did last year, but make a run in the playoffs. If he holds them back, then that should temper your enthusiasm with a contract. This is just like booking flights. Heck, it's just like going to flights. I like booking flights at the last moment. I like showing up at the airport at the last moment. I like I like as much freedom to make a decision and make a change as possible. That's valuable to me. And God bless the Bills. They've been searching for 20 years to find that guy, and they think they found that guy. But between Carson Wentz and Jared Goff, those are two. Even Derek Carr, those are some contracts which I think most of us would say, yeah, I'd like to take that one back. Maybe not necessarily even the dollars, just the year in which they decided to do it. Doing it early before you absolutely know and then getting burned, there is precedent for it. And while I think Josh Allen is much better than Jared Goff, and the Buffalo Bills drafted him, they've coached him, and he's led them to the playoffs, and he appears to be a guy who continues to improve and work, and some of the work ethic with Jared Goff was called into question, the fact is they cut out any of their sort of flexibility so that they have cost certainty, which is fine. Like that again, there's a give and a take there. They know what their quarterback's going to cost for the next half decade or so. That has value to them. To me, what has value is flexibility.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Maybe the most interesting storyline in the NFL. I don't see Deshaun Watson being traded. How do you sell your franchise on or your fans on? Hey, we're bringing in a guy who's got these pending lawsuits against him. Houston can't play him. He doesn't want to play for Houston. It's a marriage that's going to end in a divorce. It's just the timing isn't right now. So, you know, look, there's a lot of different quarterback storylines, which are interesting. I think the Jimmy Garoppolo one, okay, is maybe the most interesting because it's true. Jimmy Garoppolo did not make the plays in the Super Bowl that could have closed the deal, could have won them the game. And there's just no way in which you can convince me that throwing 8 passes in the NFC Championship game signified that they had a tremendous amount of confidence in Garoppolo. Look at how they were playing even at the end of the first half in the Super Bowl. So, yes, he was able to get them to a Super Bowl. Yes, he was able to help them see sustained success, which they hadn't seen really since Alex Smith was there. You know, they had success with Colin Kaepernick, but Kaepernick, if you look back, he took over one season, the next season was really good, and then he kind of plateaued and even and really kind of fell off after that. And then the team had to be retooled. Garoppolo's given them some consistent success when he's played. They've been a playoff team. Even go back to his first year, remember, when he went on that run, he got traded by New England. They weren't going to play him. Then they played him. They started winning games and surprised even themselves. This was Kyle Shanahan talking about his quarterbacks. It's both of them. That's why we keep repping it. I mean, it's a hard thing about it. That's why when you just dabble in that stuff, you're going to get turnovers. Right? He goes on to say that Garoppolo, okay, Garoppolo looks sharp. Garoppolo's playing the best football of his life. But the reality to it is, you know, you move mountains to go and get your quarterback and you trade and get Trey Lance. Now, if you want to say, hey, Garoppolo is going to have a longer leash than other people in his position because Trey Lance only played one football game last year and wasn't playing at a super high level, like, that's fair. It's fair. But Lance started fast over the weekend and Jimmy Garoppolo kind of caught him. I do think that Jimmy Garoppolo should have the leg up because he does know the system like the back of his hands. He has seen live bullets. He's seen the livest of bullets in the Super Bowl. But you can't believe a word any of these guys say. Do I believe he's playing the best football of his life? Okay, sure. Is he motivated by it? Sure. Is he their long-term quarterback? Of course not. You don't draft a guy that high. You don't move mountains that much unless you're ultimately going to make him your starting quarterback. You don't just suddenly have an epiphany one day driving work. You know, Jimmy is good enough. Let's just stick with Jimmy. Let's figure out how to do it, how to have them both. Like, that's not going to happen. And the question is, did they do the Sam Bradford? Or did they do the Alex Smith? The Sam Bradford is, Eagles obviously signed him, brought him back. Then they went and drafted Carson Wentz. And ultimately, when Minnesota had an injury, they traded. And they got a first-round draft pick for him. And they end up kind of winning the day, if you will. That's the Bradford. Which I don't think you can do with Indy because Wentz will, by most people's estimation, be back. And I think we all view Wentz as a little emotionally, he has a fragile level of confidence. Like, this is what his flaws are. He's got a self-esteem, a quarterback self-esteem issue. It's like you want to grab him and say, Carson, you're good enough, you're smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like you. A crisis in confidence isn't help when you bring in Jimmy Garoppolo, even if it's because you've been banged up and you're always hurt. It definitely takes him out of the Nick Foles thing. They can't bring in Nick Foles. Can you imagine? You're Carson Wentz. You're like, again with this guy? No, thanks. Doesn't matter how good of friends they are. Nick Foles is a great human being. He's going to be a pastor when he's done. Like, all that is great. It's still Nick Foles, the guy who won the Super Bowl while he sat there and watched his team win it. But to me, he's playing the best football of his life signifies they want to move him. But it's weird because do you want to move him when you could legitimately compete for and maybe win a Super Bowl? Like, look, if they have Nick Bosa on the defensive line, if they're healthy, that's a stacked group. That's a stacked group. And as much as Trey Lance checks a bunch of boxes, the idea that Trey Lance played one football game last year and never played consistently, wasn't playing high major D1 football, and he's going to come to the Niners and take them to the Super Bowl, nobody sees that. The Sam Bradford thing is the dream. The Alex Smith thing is the reality, right? Which is you hold on to him. You let him have this entire year. You make it about Garoppolo. You make him the quarterback. And you tell him, like, look, this is all an audition for next year's job somewhere else. But in the meantime, you're our quarterback. But it is weird when you start putting out he's playing the best football of his life sort of thing. That is the somebody come make an offer sort of statement, right? As much as the Texans are an abject disaster with their Deshaun Watson thing, of course, you got a guy in the front office who drafted Jimmy Garoppolo. And as much as it doesn't feel like there's another team, right? There's Houston, all right, we can't do it. They got too many quarterbacks and they got to figure out the Deshaun thing. All right, Philly can't do it because they're waiting on Deshaun Watson. Okay, Indy can't do it because they don't want to hurt the fragile confidence of Carson Wentz. Those are three options. There'll be three more. There'll be three more. Kyle Shanahan talking about 49ers QBs to Albert Breer. I think it's going to be tough for Lance to win the job, just in terms of being two different styles of quarterbacks and maybe different styles of offense for both. I'd be very surprised if we did with the way Jimmy's playing. I'd put a lot of that on a kid to do that. He's doing everything he can. He's very impressed with him so far, but I'd be very surprised if that happened. John Lynch told this to Adam Schefter. Jimmy is a big-time competitor, and we haven't played a game yet, but in practice, in the offseason, and practice in training camp thus far, he's playing the best football since he's been here. Now here's the reality to going in, and I think some of you know this from playing in high school. Those of us who played in college know it. Right? And the same rings true in the pros. There's a lot of people that ask questions about, hey, Anthony Lynn, for example, last year. Okay. If you ask anybody around the Chargers now, they're like, how were we settling on Tyrod Taylor or Tyrod Taylor? Now, you have to keep in mind that Anthony Lynn had coached Tyrod Taylor in Buffalo when they went to the playoffs. And that Tyrod Taylor is a guy who never turns the ball over. And he was replacing Phillip Rivers, who became a turnover machine late in his career. But more than anything, Taylor knew the offense. Taylor knew what he was supposed to be doing. Whereas it was completely and totally new. Okay, it's completely and totally new for a rookie quarterback. And so when you have, it's not just having sweat equity. When you just know what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to do it and where the ball's supposed to go, it makes everything so much easier for you, you know? So when you sit there and you ask yourself, how could Justin Herbert sit behind Tyrod Taylor if not for, you know, the team doctor mistakenly injecting the lung of Tyrod Taylor, right? I mean, Justin Herbert is an absolute, looks like an absolute star. You go to Chargers practice, and if you're like me and you've been to their training camp the past 3 or 4 years, especially going back to when they had Phillip Rivers, it's a different sport. There were just areas of the football field that Phillip couldn't throw the ball to anymore. There are no areas of the football field when Justin Herbert can't throw the football to. He looks the part. He acts the part. He feels, how could they have missed? Well, look, Trey Lance is the same thing. Trey Lance checks a ton of boxes for what eventually the Niners quarterback's going to look like. But I can tell you this. It's different, but it's the same. My first year in college, I went to Notre Dame. I played for John McLeod. John McLeod was a long time, 18 years a head coach, I believe, in the NBA. And I was, I guess, promised. I was told I'd be the starting point guard. And I would tell you, 3 weeks into practice, I didn't think I could ever play college basketball. I was that bad. Because you think you've, like, you know, I played for an outstanding high school coach. I played for a high-level AU program. I played in every different all-star game. You know, I played at high level, whatever the highest level, and I played against college guys and pro guys in the summer, but I got there and they start setting real screens and running real offense and playing real defense, and I was completely lost. Completely lost. Part of it was they were running like a style of motion offense I had never run before. There was no traditional secondary break. I'd never played that way before. But more than anything, they were bigger, faster, stronger, but they knew what they were doing. And it took about a month before I kind of figured it out. And in all honesty, I got to play long before I should have. Why? Because the coaches saw what ultimately my ceiling was, which is what they all see with Trey Lance. They know ultimately Trey Lance is going to be the guy. It's just a mix of, do we let it organically happen on its own where Jimmy falls apart? Do we let it organically happen on its own where Jimmy plays out this year, and then contractually talent wins over the locker room? It's a challenge. We know how it all ends, but how do they actually get to how it all ends? That's what I think is the fascinating part. We know Trey Lance is going to be the quarterback next year in San Francisco. But these next 12 months, what does that look like? I'm trying to read the tea leaves and trying to believe that John Lynch really thinks that Jimmy Garoppolo is a competitor and is capable of playing despite this intense pressure, a guy looking over his shoulder. But I've also lived on this earth long enough to not believe a word of what GMs tell anybody who's got a pen and a pad.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week. Explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Doug Gottlieb for Colin. This is The Herd. Let's talk some football with a guy who's been a general manager in the National Football League. And he's been in the same situation as so many of these GMs, where you have a young star quarterback who you drafted, who you put equity behind, and yet you have a guy who has more experience and probably looks better in camp in practice. Doug Whaley joins us here in The Herd on Fox Sports Radio. Doug, how are you?
Doug, I'm doing great. I mean, last week football started, and you had the induction ceremony these last 2 days, and it just means every day's a holiday now that football season started.
Okay, so you're the general manager of the Buffalo Bills, and you draft E.J. Manuel, right?
Yeah, I was assistant GM, but I was part of that draft, absolutely.
Okay, so you guys draft E.J. Manuel. At the time, was Fitz still under that big contract there? What was the other situation for the rest of the quarterbacks on that team?
Yeah, Fitz was still under that contract, and we were really looking for somebody that would be the heir apparent and take us to that next level, as in a young guy that's going to be there for 10 to 15 years. And it was one of the things that the GM at the time, Buddy Nix, was there, and he just said before, and at the time, unbeknownst to me, he said, before I leave, I want to get a quarterback for the future of this organization. And after we drafted him, I think it was maybe a week later, he decided to hang him up, and then that's when I took over in 14 after the draft.
Okay, so truth be told, was EJ your pick as well? Did you, if you would have been able, like obviously we can go back and we could pick apart EJ's game. He's a brilliant human being, but would that have been your pick, or did Buddy make the final call?
Buddy made the final call, but I the way we set it up, he would have been our pick, or if I was the GM, my pick, but probably not in the first round. Buddy was just so adamant about getting him. It was his guy, and he wanted to remove all doubt. And that's one of those things, especially with the rookie salary cap now, you can overdraft quarterbacks, especially in the first round, because it's not going to be such a burden on your cap as before, that like it was before when they didn't have that rookie salary cap. So if you like a guy, especially at that quarterback, you want to remove all doubt so you're not kicking yourself saying, I wish we would have.
Okay, so how do you go about, you want him to be the starter, but you know he's not ready. Like, how do you go about that in terms of allowing there's some competition, but also allowing the guy that you want to assume the job?
Well, what do you do is you have competition, and that's one of the things, but you structure it in a way that the guy doesn't get overwhelmed. You want him to come in and be able to assimilate to being a professional. And it's just like going from high school to college, and you did it too, Doug. There's that transition period, and some guys can take that transition and run with it day one, and other guys, it's going to take some time for them to assimilate, and especially at that quarterback position. You don't want to overburden them real too quickly until you see them respond. And if they respond in a very mature way, then you let the reins off and say, go get it. And there's some guys that have done it, and they've done it to a high level. And there's other guys that have taken some time. And that's what I always say about Mahomes. He is an incredible talent, and everybody saw the ceiling that he could reach to. We, especially in Buffalo, weren't sure how long it would take him to get there. And the situation he came into in Kansas City, I thought, is the main reason why he's as good as he is, as quickly as he is. If he goes to another situation, is he the Mahomes that's been to two Super Bowls and won one already at this time in his career? I don't know. I would probably say no. But because he went into that right situation and they had a plan for him,
yeah.
It just shows that that's – and it's a case-by-case basis, but they did a great job with him.
No, it's a great point because I've defended the Bears. I have some friends in the Bears organization, and they kind of told me, like, look, it's the same thing. Like, we like Mahomes. We thought he had a higher ceiling than Mitch Trubisky, but we also were worried about the floor. And, you know, Trubisky seemed like a better kind of rah-rah leader, whereas, remember, they're replacing a guy in Jay Cutler who everybody hated, right? The players just didn't like Jay Cutler, right? So you got to bring a guy that everybody loves. And not that people don't love Mahomes, but he's a very laid-back personality, especially early on when he first... Who you're seeing now in a Pat Mahomes was not who he was coming out of the draft. And that's a really hard thing to... How does a guy assimilate to the NFL? Does being a star go to his head? You know, these are hard things to judge, but I would agree with you is that we have no idea what Pat Mahomes would look like had he been drafted by anybody other than the Kansas City Chiefs.
No doubt about it. And you got to look at it too. You hit something that a lot of people don't think about. Look at how he is a leader off the field now. What he's done with the social awareness and the social justice and how he's ingratiated himself in the community. And he's just a big a leader or strong a leader off the field in his community and in the country, and taking that mantle of being the face of the NFL,
that's a
burden that a lot of people can't bear. Add to the fact the pressures that is that come with being a starting quarterback, a first round pick that they gave up a lot of draft capital to go up and get. So that's a lot of pressure for him to shoulder it, and not only shoulder it but thrive. I told you that's a special human being, but they had a special plan for him, and his support system has to be very, very successful, and they have and shown that they got the right team around them.
Doug Whaley joining us here. Doug Gottlieb for calling us the Herd. What people don't know about Doug is before he was the general manager and assistant general manager, he was a scout with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I believe, you tell me if I'm wrong, you're one of the guys credited for saying, hey, we need to go get Troy Polamalu. Take me back to Troy Polamalu. When you saw him in college, and then yesterday we see him officially become a Hall of Famer, what you remember the first time you saw Troy play?
So the essence of being a scout is to paint a picture of a player that someone hasn't seen in person before in the shortest amount of time possible. And he is the only player in my 20-plus years of evaluating talent where when I was sitting and writing a report, I didn't know what to write. And you're saying, how does that? Because he was such a unique skill set that he wasn't an explosive hitter, but he made tackles. He wasn't a great cover guy, but he always found a way to intercept the ball. He was just the ultimate playmaker. So I came back and I was talking to my boss at the time, Kevin Colburn, and he says, hey, you went out and saw Troy. What do you think of him? I said, I don't know how to explain this guy, but he's just, you got to take him. He will be a great player. And he goes, I looked at him. I explained him like water. And I go, what do you mean that? He goes, wherever he needs to be, he'll be there. If you pour a bottle of water, that water is going to find that crevice, that crack, or wherever it needs to be. He's going to be there and make plays. And I said, that's it. He's like water. It was the strangest thing. You knew what you liked about him, and you knew he was a great football player, and he had a high ceiling. It was just hard to put in words because it was such a unique skill set, and you just couldn't peg him into, oh, he's a hard-hitting safety. He's a free safety ball hawk. He was just everything.
What was the draft night? I don't know. Were you in the room during draft night? What, like, this is 2003. For people who forget, 2003, Carson Palmer went one. Charles Rogers went two, right? Andre Johnson, three. Terrell Suggs went 10, right? Marcus Trufant was the first defensive back off the board. At 16, you're sitting there, and, you know, Calvin Pace is available. There's some other, Willis McGahee is available. Of course, he had the knee injury. Larry Johnson, the running back's available. Nnamdi Asamoah was available. What do you remember about that draft night 2003?
We just remember that all those guys were available, but where we were and where our defense was at that time with Pittsburgh, we thought we needed a playmaking safety. And it was one of those things that Pittsburgh very rarely trades up in the first round. So it was a little consternation that, hey, should we do something out of character? But to a man in that room, it was, if you're going to do it for somebody, do it for a guy like this. Because, and you saw it with his acceptance speech, as good as the player he is on the field, he's a better man off the field. So that he embodied what, again, like he said, the Steeler way and the Steeler culture, he checked all the boxes, hit all the marks. So we're going to say, we're going to do it. We're going to do it for this guy. And at that time, it was a no-brainer, and we were just hoping no one ahead of us was going to take him and saw what we saw in him. So it was one of those where before the day or two before the draft, we were on the phone talking to people ahead of us saying, would you be interested in coming up or going down, or what are you thinking about in this draft day? So we targeted a couple teams that they were saying, hey, give us a call two or three picks before our pick, and if our guy either gone or we feel we can move back and there's a guy maybe in your position that we can get, we'll be able to make the deal. So a lot of the framework was tentatively discussed before that day, but that day it was some anxious moments, but it obviously turned out to be a Hall of Fame moment.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's an incredible, incredible football player, and he's a playmaker, right? There was no real definable way in which you just had to watch him. You had to watch him to get it. And if you watch the football game, he jumped off the screen, both literally and figuratively. Doug Whaley joining us here in the herd. Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin. Okay, so now we look at current quarterback situations. You got Jimmy Garoppolo, who's taken them to a Super Bowl. They led in the second half. Now, he missed on some throws. But when he's been healthy, they've been a playoff team. They've been a Super Bowl team. But they move mountains to get Trey Lance. He's different. He only played one game last year because of COVID, but obviously super high ceiling. What are your thoughts on how the Niners should handle the situation?
I think you look at it as if you're a pool player, you're always looking to make that first shot, but you're also trying to leave that ball so you can set yourself up for the second shot. And they're playing pool with this decision because, like you said, Jimmy Garoppolo is a productive winning quarterback in the league. His biggest issue is health, availability. So what you do is you take a young guy knowing at some point we will not be able to depend on this player, this quarterback, for the long run. But as he's playing now, let's bring in somebody that's young, that has all the talent in the world, help him learn behind Jimmy Garoppolo, that learn behind Tom Brady. Let them learn the trade. Let them learn how to be professionals, how to assimilate to the pro game, especially where he's coming from. He basically had a one game last year that he played, so he lost that year. He was in 1AA or championship level. So he's got to make a couple strides, not just steps, some strides to be able to perform at a high level. Why not put him behind a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo? And, oh, well, if Jimmy gets hurt this year, we still have this guy to come in and be able – you'll accelerate his time frame, but he will be able to at least learn from day one how to be a pro and how to be a quarterback in this league from a guy that's done it at a high level. Like you said, he's been no Super Bowl before.
I want to ask you about Josh Allen, who obviously has helped take the Bills. They went to the playoffs with Tyrod Taylor, and he's continued kind of that upward trajectory. They gave him a massive deal, $150 million guaranteed, and did it before they necessarily had to. Do you like, philosophically, do you like the idea of paying a guy maybe before you have to?
I look at it this way. If you wait around, and then you have, he blows it up another year, and the price just goes up. Then you start looking at it like a Kirk Cousins type deal where you got to play that franchise tag deal 2 years in a row, and it just creates an air in that locker room of saying, what do I have to do to get paid by this organization? If the quarterback that's performed at a high level 2 years in a row, 3 years in a row, and they're not bending over backwards to give him security and be the face of that franchise for the rest of his career, what else do I have to do? So you got to be careful about the message it sends in that locker room. And I think doing it a year early sends a great message. It shows Josh, I have security, and I don't have to have this constant nagging by the press over my head of what about the conversation, what about the contract, contract, contract. And then that message it sends in the locker room is just, it's worth probably what they paid him. Because if you look at the numbers, when you look at it, it's not going to be until year eight that Mahomes actually makes more money than him cumulative. I think year eight, Mahomes will be made $285 million, and Allen will make $284 million. So, and think about it. Mahomes has been to two Super Bowls and won one. So it's a great deal for Josh and for Bills. They may have overpaid, but they got their guy.
Yes. I mean, I hear all of that, but the difference in this and a Kirk Cousins and a Dak Prescott is those guys were fourth round picks, so they weren't making anything. There wasn't the fifth year where you have the huge kind of contract bump, right? Like it is different than those situations. And in truth, like you had this year, next year, and then two or three franchise, like you did have time on your side. I get that you want cost certainty. I get that you're like, this is our guy, but that's what they did with Goff. And it felt like the second they signed that Goff deal, they had remorse.
Well, that just shows you that how subjective and how hard it is to evaluate talent and be correct on talent in the NFL. Because the most unpredictable specimens on this earth are humans. So you got Goff. He looks great. You give him a bunch of money. For some reason, things go south. Who knows? Was it a bad fit with McVay and he goes to somewhere else and it's going to be... You don't know. But I think, in my opinion, especially with the way he has constantly improved, this is, I'm not going to argue and say it was a year too early. Do they could have waited a year? Absolutely. I could see that. But if this is your guy, don't be afraid to make that move and make that deal and get it. And then you take the pressure off of everybody. And then they can focus on taking that next step and closing that gap to Kansas City instead of every single moment. What about Josh's contract? What about Josh's contract? And then also you set the market. So if the number one pick, Baker Mayfield, signs for you, then Josh has a better year than Baker, then that's going to elevate that price. So what I think they're doing was pay a little bit more now than to pay a lot more later if you wait.
Last thing, I went to Rams. I was at Rams camp on Wednesday, and the raving about Matt Stafford, like, look, this guy, he has the experience, he has the arm, he can make every throw, he's more mobile than people understand. Are you a buyer into that this is a massive upgrade for the Rams?
I'm not. I mean, everybody's going to put the blame on Detroit and what they had, or lack of weapons and team around Matthew Stafford. I just think he's a very talented person, very talented quarterback. But there's a difference between being talented and being a winner. When you look at it, Tom Brady, his talent is not in his physical talent. It's right in his ability to win, to never say die, and to take it his game to the next level and elevate everybody else's game. And Matthew's never done that. Stafford has never elevated the teams around him to get them to win a playoff game. And this is what year is this? 9-10 for him? A leopard, after a while, especially in that quarter, in that position, that's hard for him to change his stripes. So I could see him, in my opinion, they got that number one defense. If that comes back, Sean McVay, if he lives up to that offensive guru status that he's been lamented with, I could see him maybe winning his first playoff game. I just don't see it right now of him changing his stripes that much that take them to the promised land of where they want to go.
Doug, it's always great to catch up with you. You always give us deep, thoughtful, honest opinions. And I love that you got to see your guy, Troy Polamalu, get inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame yesterday. Thanks for being our guest on Fox Sports Radio.
Always a pleasure.